Hi, friends. This is Pastor Harley Wheeler with the Broadway United Methodist Church. I'd like to welcome you to this podcast. We are going through the story of Joseph and his brothers in the book of Genesis. We're going to be beginning in chapter 47 of Genesis at verse 13. We have come a long way in this story. We first met Joseph and his brothers. Joseph was having dreams about being a ruler even over his brothers and his father and mother. And the brothers rejected him. They left him for dead in a well, but then also, you know, decided, well, no, let's sell him into slavery in Egypt, figuring that's the last they would hear of him. They brought their father to grief, and then having to sojourn back to Egypt to buy food in the time of famine, they found that Joseph, instead of living as a slave in Egypt, a short and miserable life, he's risen to be ruler of Egypt. Joseph tests his brothers to see if they've learned a lesson about what it means to love, one of their family as indeed a brother. And he finds that they are now true and honest men. He reveals himself to them. And then they call for his grieving father, Jacob, who's been many years, 18, 20 years, missing his son, Joseph. And in the last podcast, in chapter 46, we learned that we saw them reunited and the family planted in the land of Goshen, in the land of Egypt. So we'll take up the story here, because one of the drivers to this part of the story that brought us to the point where Joseph and his brothers could be reunited was that there was a famine going on in Egypt and in the land of Canaan. The crops were failing, and hunger was a very real problem. Now, the writer of Genesis gives us now what Joseph did in the name of Pharaoh in this time of famine. It said, now there was no food in all the land, for the famine was very severe, so that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan languished by reason of the famine. And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, in exchange for the grain that they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, give us food. Why should we die before your eyes? For our money is gone. And Joseph answered, give your livestock, and I will give you food in exchange for your livestock if your money is gone. So they brought their livestock to Joseph, and Joseph gave them food in exchange for the horses, the flocks, the herds, and the donkeys. He supplied them with food in exchange for all their livestock that year. And when that year was ended, they came to him the following year and said to him, we will not hide from my lord that our money is all spent. The herds of livestock are my lord's. There is nothing left in the sight of my lord but our bodies and our land. Why should we die before your eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for food, and we with our land will be servants to Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, so that land may not be desolate. Now, one thing that we listen to this and think, well, Pharaoh's getting all the money and all the livestock, and Joseph's doing that in his name, and we're just not sure whether that is right. In fact, the Bible will not always tell you when something is being done right or wrong. You're allowed to make your own judgment. There is just a good possibility that the view that one may take is that, well, this was an appropriate response. Remember that there's nothing in this region of the world that approaches a representative democracy, a republic. There's nothing that approaches the respect and the inalienable right of human beings to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, or a Bill of Rights that the government guarantees. And so we only have autocratic rulers or to deal with, or in different regions, you would have strongmen and people who just took what they wanted by force. You realize if there is not the rule of Pharaoh, the land will be, the food that remains will be in the hands of the most cunning, ruthless, and strongest. Pharaoh represents for these people the order of government, that there are laws and they can be followed. And also this idea that there's a famine ravaging. You know, we think of the wolf at the door. These people can hear the wolf barking and growling. People living in ancient times, this pre-modern era, Bronze Age era, would be very familiar with what famine would do, even if one had not hit and is severe like this in their lifetime, these stories would be passed along as a story, as we might say, of some great disaster. But we were preserved. We lived through that. And so they may be recounting this story as how Egypt was preserved. I mean, what other way was there to make sure that, you know, people were held accountable for the food that they ate when food was indeed in short supply? We are allowed to remember that this is a story about God. It is a story of God moving events, and people in Egypt might have been like we have been with the pandemic. What is the famine news today? What is the new famine policy? Can you believe what they're saying we have to do in regard to this famine? We have said all these things about the COVID-19 pandemic. But though we might be sure that that's the story of the times, the story of the times in God's eyes is that he has put the people in the land of Goshen, where they will not only thrive, prosper, they will, you know, grow to be a great people, but also they will be brought up against a very powerful Pharaoh, one who would as much say, all this land of mine, all these people are mine, all these people are my servants. And this Pharaoh will be humbled before God. It is not the time for a Pharaoh to be humbled before God, and mysteriously, it's not the time for democratic republics to appear all over the place. The church has, in its day, dealt with kings, it's dealt with prime ministers, it's dealt with republics, it's dealt with straight democracies, it's dealt with communist regimes, it's dealt with robber barons. The church is the church and is not swayed by the powers of the world when we are trusting in God. And we would deal with those who are in authority in our region as best we can. And the whole issue is not really brought to the fore here. We're finding that Joseph continues as ruler of Egypt, and Pharaoh is blessed, is made strengthened, and his position is improved by having Joseph in charge and working for him. This would speak to many Jews who didn't always live in the land of Israel, saying, remember, there's that story that outlines that you know, rulers of the nations, the pagans, that the Israelites would say, the worshippers of other gods, are blessed in the short term by our presence among them. Recalling a picture that out of all nations, it was told Abraham, out of you all nations will be blessed. You'll be a light to all nations. There's a story here that is everyone's story, just encapsulating the family story of the people that came from Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. So verse 20 begins, so Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh, and for all the Egyptians sold their fields because the famine was severe on them. The land became Pharaoh's. As for the people, he made servants of them from one end of Egypt to the other. Only the land of the priests he did not buy, for the priests had a fixed allowance from Pharaoh and lived on the allowance that Pharaoh gave them. Therefore, they did not sell their land. Then Joseph said to the people, behold, I have this day bought you and your land for Pharaoh. Now here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land. And at the harvest you shall give a fifth to Pharaoh, and four-fifths shall be your own, as seed for the field, and as food for yourselves and your households, and as food for your little ones. And they said, you have saved our lives. May it please my lord, we will be servants to Pharaoh. So Joseph made a statute concerning the land of Egypt, and it stands to this day, that the Pharaoh should have the fifth, and the land of the priests alone did not become Pharaoh's. And so here we have the continuing story. In fact, the famine begins now to recede from view. It does become a tale pointing out that to the time of the writing of this down, when it was recorded, this was still the practice in Egypt. And in fact, that might show a development in who the pharaohs thought they were, and saying pretty much all these people are my servants. And now it is also true that, you know, we sometimes visualize the pyramids as being built by slaves, but actually you would understand that the farmers in Egypt looked on a season of building of these great pyramids and other monumental structures as basically the job they could do when they weren't planting and harvesting the fields. They were fed well. They weren't, necessarily mistreated any more than a person was mistreated in Bronze Age society, which could be violent. and careless of human life. So anyway, Joseph has accomplished all for Pharaoh and that he could hope to have. And we can understand that, you know, as Joseph hands seed, he says, you know, here's hope. The famine is over. We've found our way through, and it is remembered that it is the wisdom that God gave to him in interpretation of Pharaoh's dream that leads to people saying, you have saved our lives. How are we listening to God so that we can save the lives of others? Can we save literal lives? Can we lead people away from addiction? Can we put food on the tables of those who are food insecure? Can we reach out into poor and troubled nations where Christian brothers and sisters suffer, where human beings suffer, where children are orphans? And can we save life? And also, all that God is moving through Joseph. I mean, the story of God is moving through Joseph. It is channeled through his life at this time. And it saves life as a sign that we are here to bring eternal life. We are to be a light to the nation, a kingdom of priests. And our stuff does not belong to the world. We could say that. Look, something that Joseph set up is the priests didn't deliver their land to Pharaoh. Yes, the Apostle Peter would say, you are a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. And when we are in that group, our stuff doesn't belong to the world. We will live in the world. We will pay taxes in the world. In fact, we could say, I wish the tax rate was only 20%. It'd be grand. We will make certain accommodations in regard to the authority of those in this world. But this world can make no claim on what our true possession and inheritance is, because it is Christ. Verse 27 says, thus Israel settled in the land of Egypt, in the land of Goshen, and they gained possessions in it, and were fruitful, and multiplied greatly. And Jacob lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. So the days of Jacob, the years of his life, were 147 years. And when the time drew near that Israel must die, he called his son Joseph and said to him, if now I have found favor in your sight, put your hand under my thigh and promise to deal kindly and truly with me. Do not bury me in Egypt, but let me lie with my fathers. Carry me out of Egypt and bury me in their burying place. He answered, I will do as you have said. And he said, swear to me. And he swore to him. Then Israel bowed himself upon the head of his bed. Again, we are moving to the conclusion of the story. And we have all the people settled in the land of Egypt, and we know that they will just proverbially multiply. You know that if an ancient Jew had something to say about something that really worked out great, that grew beyond all expectations, that earned a great profit, says they could say it grew like we grew when we had settled in Egypt, in Goshen, from 70 people into a great nation. And Jacob lives on and sees all this. You know, he's somebody whose life has lived long enough to see so many promises come true. And it's good maybe to imagine him counting all the things that God has set right in his life and made come true and right, as we should do as well. And so he lives 147 years. And at the near the end of that time, you know, we're quite naturally looking for his parting words. And he calls Joseph to him, and just without any explanation, because it seemed to be obvious, you know, place your hand here. Let me just under my thigh and swear to me. In fact, it says it twice, whether it was a two-part oath or an emphasis on saying you're making a solemn promise. And boy, that's the cowboy promise. Do not bury me under the lone prairie. Carry me back home. Something like that. Jacob is saying this, you know, do not leave me in Egypt. My place is not Egypt. I have a possession in the land that God promised me. Bury me in the burying place of my fathers. Do you swear to do that? And Joseph says that indeed he will. Jacob is in Egypt, and it's probably the fattest and best time of his life, except the fact that he's 147 years old or 140 years old or whatever. But his true possession is elsewhere. It is not for Israel to ever say, well, we now seem to be planted in this land and it's so grand, we'll never leave. When Christians are given the grace from God, Perhaps our lives are better organized. Perhaps we sorted out our stuff to some profit. We're not to say, well, here we will stay in the world. No. Let me go to the place of the promise, to the land that God has set aside for me. That is the picture that Jacob gives us. Now, verse 48 answers a question also for the Jewish reader. They know of the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. They would know from old lessons that Ephraim and Manasseh were the children of Joseph. And sort of we have two tribes coming out of Jacob's one son, Joseph. And we wanted to hear about that. And in fact, a father's blessing on a son or grandson was expected. And it's the sort of thing, well, you can't tell the story without going into that. So verse 48 says, after this, Joseph was told, behold, your father is ill. So he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And it was told to Jacob, your son Joseph has come to you. Then Israel summoned his strength and sat up in bed. And Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you. And I will make of you a company of peoples and will give this land to your offspring after you for an everlasting possession. And now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt are mine. As Reuben, Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine, as Reuben and Simeon are. And the children that you fathered after them shall be yours. They shall be called by the name of their brothers in their inheritance. As for me, when I came from Padan to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Canaan on the way, when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath. And I buried her there on the way to Ephrath, that is, Bethlehem. So now, we might look at this and say, well, we kind of got the story of Joseph and his brothers and the great famine and the kid and the selling the slaves and Joseph's adventures all kind of sorted out. Why are we going on about this? Well, certainly, Jacob actually says something that we might say, well, this gets enshrined in Israel's constitution. There should not be a tribe of Joseph so much, though the word Joseph in terms of a tribe or group comes up now and then in the Old Testament, but it was understood, well understood, that his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, were given the status of sons of Jacob. In other words, Joseph's two sons hold the status as he does, that he does amongst his brothers. When Joseph has more children from that point on, they shall be incorporated in the clans of these two brothers. So Jacob gives Joseph a great blessing and reward. He shall not be but one, but two tribes. And so these will have rights and a standing in the unfolding of the promise of God that is going on. Jacob, right now he's living in the mother-in-law suite at Joseph's place. All the people are at Joseph's and Pharaoh's pleasure in the land of Goshen and doing very well. They do not possess the land that God has promised them yet. So Jacob, as a sign, holds really a piece of land there where a body might be buried. You know, something that he possesses quite himself. And when he has pronounced that he will be buried there, we overlooked last time that he worships at the head of his bed, or leans on the head of his bed. The picture actually seems to be one of worship. He knows that God will fulfill the promises in him, take the larger story that Joseph is continuing on, and these children shall be that great people that God promised, outnumbering the stars in the sky. And so, you know, there's a word there about Joseph's father, Rachel, that is the one, you know, that Joseph's mother, Rachel, Jacob points out where she died and was buried. That's family history. We remember that we're reading and hearing family history here. But the upshot of this is that there's a possession, there's a standing in Israel that Ephraim and Manasseh, the children, the family that will come from them, can say, yes, we belong in this. There are those activities that people do at the bidding of God, at the direction of God, but also because their hearts are full. And so that sometimes we can't directly lay our finger on the thing that God told us to do, but that was just known to us to be the loving thing to do. This blessing comes at the hand of Jacob, almost as he is inspired that he knows this is the right thing. And it sticks. Everyone at this point, after hearing the stories of brotherly love, nods their heads and says, "That's right. The Ephraimites and the tribe of Manasseh, those are our people as well." Now, verse 8 says, "When Israel saw Joseph's sons, he said, 'Who are these?' Joseph said to his father, 'They are my sons, whom God has given me here.' And he said, 'Bring them to me, please, that I may bless them.' Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age, so that he could not see. So Joseph brought them near him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, 'I never expected to see your face. And behold, God has let me see your offspring also.' Then Joseph removed them from his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on the head of Manasseh, crossing his hands, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, 'The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys. And in them let my name be carried on, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth.'" Now, a father's blessing held great legal import. We have this pictured as in, you know, Jacob's bedroom, his sick bed. He needs assistance to sit up, so he cannot see. But it could indeed be very public. It was hard to get privacy in the ancient world, really. Houses were not that large. People could look in windows. So there is a public pronouncement, you know, that he is blessing these boys. He has not only declared their inheritance, he has affirmed it with a prayer and a blessing. And there's a blessing we can remember. Bless these boys. Bless the generation that comes after. And of course, all peoples on earth are to be blessed through what God is doing in us. But we must remember that it's a key and wonderful thing to know how to raise boys, to see boys come into manhood. And we can enjoy that, watching the grandfather, the father, and the two grandsons. This presence in this special moment, you know, this is one of the things we're enjoying about this. But significantly, he has crossed his arms, his left hand upon the one who should have had Jacob's right hand on it, and his right hand on the younger brother Ephraim. Well, when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him, and he took his father's hand to move it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, "Not this way, my father, since this one is the firstborn, place your right hand on his head." But his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know he shall become a great people, and he also shall be great. Nevertheless, his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his offspring shall become a multitude of nations." So I blessed them that day, saying, "By you, Israel, will pronounce blessings, saying, 'God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh.'" Thus he put Ephraim before Manasseh. Then Israel said to Joseph, "Behold, I am about to die, but God will be with you and will bring you again to the land of your fathers. More I have given to you rather than to your brothers, one mountain slope that I took from the hand of the Amorites with my sword and my bow." Now we're very much entering the last point in Jacob's life. I'll be skipping over chapter 49, the first 27 verses, which is a prophecy, a poetic prophecy that Jacob gives over all his family, his, you know, naming each tribe by name. It's just not to the Joseph and his brothers kind of a story that we want to go. There's a prophecy of the Messiah in there, that the scepter shall not depart from Judah until Shiloh comes indeed. Jacob says many things, but I'm going to want to go on to conclude the activity part of the story. And so Jacob has one last surprise. He's been a man of surprises. He surprised his brother Esau. He surprised his parents. He surprised his uncle Laban. He probably surprised his own sons when he just wouldn't stop grieving for Joseph. And he finally says, the one named Ephraim, the younger, "I'm telling you that his offspring, his part in the story will seem, yes, indeed, greater than his brothers. He will be first, be preeminent. There will be that in which Ephraim will lead and do, that Manasseh's people shall not, though they also shall be a blessing and be blessed. And so he printed and says their growth, their life, their offspring, their fruitfulness will become a proverb amongst all our people. And then finally, Israel says, and it's quite believable, I'm about to die. Sometimes people know and are very sure. I've seen that happen myself. But he says, even though, you know, we're going to be saying goodbye to Jacob here, God will be with you. Whoever comes in and out of the Bible story, it is God that remains constant and is with his people from generation to generation. And we get an illustration of what it means for generation to generation to people to know the protection in the hand of God. And he also gives to Joseph, his descendants personally, a certain place that he acquired by conquest from the Ammonites. And so that kind of concludes where we are with this podcast of Joseph and his brothers, looking at chapters 47 and 48. And I thank you for listening in. There is one more podcast to go, beginning at chapter 49, verse 28, and to the end of the book. And so I thank you for being with us and hope you join us for the next session. Be blessed.